Friends, namaste. And it's 8 p.m. India time. Welcome to Gyan Ganga, Words of Wisdom on our Virat Hindustan Sangam social media channels. You know that we have been having this program since April during the lockdown, that is 2020. And we have now, today is our 134th episode. Earlier, we used to have a daily program, and when we converted it into a Sunday program. So for the information of viewers who have joined recently, we are every day available at 8 p.m., every Sunday, sorry, available at 8 p.m. on this channel, where Dr. Subramaniam Swami, our patron founder of Virat Hindustan Sangam, speaks on different topics. Today's topic is freedom of religion and the autonomy of Hindu temples. And we will be having the next 1 hour discussion with him and question answers. I have with me my co-host, Professor Arvind Chaturvedi from Delhi, and will be joined shortly by Ramesh Swami. I also have to thank our technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Tejas Navalgul, Gadgi Rakesh, Ishwar Iyer, Swaminathan and Vishal Mehta for their support to put this program together. Our viewership across the globe and numerous countries, in fact, at the last count, we had about members or viewers watching from 120 countries. And our last week Sunday viewership has been more than 54,000 viewers. So I thank our viewers for their support, which we have been getting.
Hey, we are live on the program.
We have been getting for your support. We have been getting, and also request viewers to go to our website www.vhs, that as in Virat Hindustan Sangam, vhsindia.org, and become a member of Virat Hindustan Sangam. So with these words, it is over to Dr. Swami for giving us an idea of what is the topic and what he wants it to say about the autonomy of the Hindu temple. But I wish to remind our viewers that Dr. Swami has been in the forefront of fighting for liberating the Hindu temples from government control. And this is not something which has come overnight. Over the decades, he has been fighting many numerous PILs, whether it was the Nataraja temple of Chidambaram town versus the state government there, and which went to the Supreme Court, whether it was the Tirupati temple pillars gold plating issue, whether it was the Kerala temple issue of Devasanam issue, or numerous other issues. Dr. Swami has been in the forefront. His present challenge to the temple of Tirupati being handled by the state government is also pending, in which he has been successful to get a CAG audit for the last 5 years done by the CAG. This is the first case in India where a government has agreed for a CAG audit of the temple funds. And we have the famous now case of Uttarakhand, where Dr. Swami has challenged the BJP government taking over ancient Hindu temples of Uttarakhand. So, and that is pending in the Supreme Court. There are numerous other cases. I've just mentioned a few. So with these words, it's over to Dr. Subramaniam Swami.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Jagdish. And welcome to our latecomer, Ramesh Swami.
Sorry, sir. It was the time zone difference. I forgot, so I thought it was still another hour away. Sorry about it.
Okay, you pay a small fine and we'll forget about
yes,
it.
Yes, sir. We will pay. I'll pay the definitely.
Okay. Well, Jagdish, thank you very much for this very important topic, and I think it's going to be one of the big topics of the Hindutva platform. And I think, there's a lot of confusion as to what the status of temples is and how to go about it. So I'll begin by saying that in the Constitution, which is now like Manusmriti or Yajnavalkya Smriti, it's a code for behavior. And in the Constitution, freedom of religion, and in particular temples, appears in two very distinct places. And I say this, drawing this, because during the Ram Janmabhoomi case, it was stuck between whose property it is. The Hindu trustee said it's our property, and the Muslim Waqf board said it's our property. And then they were talking about adverse possession and you know, time factor and the usual things that you fight for your house or your property. They were treating it like a fight for property. And all these, and these are civil suits, and they went on and on and on. And finally, after 26 years, the Allahabad High Court gave a judgment, and then both sides were dissatisfied with it, because all such judgments of civil suits end up with a compromise, you know, a little bit of this. So the Allahabad High Court said the three gumbas or domes, Muslims will get one and the Hindus will get two, because there were two parties from the Hindu side, and so one each. And neither, nobody was satisfied, so they came to the Supreme Court. In the Supreme Court, it languished for 7 years and nothing happened. And finally, Ashok Singhal, quite upset of it, because his whole life revolved around it, he called a press conference and all the office bearers of the VHP and announced, to my shock, that because I was not involved in the Ram Janmabhoomi matter till then, to my shock, he announced that you know, in his lifetime, he's not going to see the temple being built. So he is handing over the charge to me. And particularly because I had saved Ram Setu when everybody else had failed, and I had come in a petition, and I was able to persuade the court to give a stay, and finally won the case. So based on that, he had this conference and he said it. So that's how I got in, and that's how I started studying the problem. Otherwise, I was only peripherally interested in the issue of temples. Now, of course, it's widespread. Now I'm also on Kashi Vishwanath and the Krishna temple. So let me start, therefore, by putting the facts as they are. And that is freedom of religion. We start with what I call as the preamble of the Constitution. What is the preamble of the Constitution? It says, we the people of India, having solemnly resolved to constitute India into a sovereign democratic republic, which Ms. Gandhi later in the emergency amended it to say sovereign socialist secular democratic republic. But when India became free and the Constitution was adopted, these two words, socialist and secular, are not there. I have a petition pending in the Supreme Court, which will come up as soon as this corona thing goes, and we go back to normal activity in the Supreme Court. I will be able to strike down both these as illegally introduced by Mrs. Gandhi, and we'll be back to the 1949 position when the Constitution was completed, and 1950. When it was adopted. So what it says is that we resolved to constitute India into a democratic republic to secure for all its citizens justice, liberty, equality, fraternity. And in the liberty, they says liberty of thought, expression, belief, faith, and worship. So faith and worship is part of liberty. And then you can go on further on and see that that has been translated into a fundamental right, and that is under Article 25 and 26. And what does Article 25 and 26 say? Article 25 says, it says freedom, the title is freedom of conscience and free profession, practice, and propagation of religion. So you have freedom to propagate your religion, but it is subject to conditions. And what are those conditions? You must not, by your religious practice, disturb public order. So you do it peacefully, no problem. Morality. So you can't say tomorrow, oh, I will, you know, to please Kali, I will chop the head of my son. You know, that's not permitted. Or you will say that untouchability, where we say, no, that cannot be part of religion. And so, so public order, morality, and health. In these conditions, we can put restrictions on religious practice only for these three things, for maintaining public order, for moral pursuits of the religion, and health. I mean, you should not, harm your health practices, and therefore these three things form the basis. And then it says, all persons are equally entitled to freedom of conscience and the right to freely profess, practice, and propagate religion. And therefore, it adds, nothing in this article of fundamental right shall affect the operation of any existing law or prevent the state from making any law to regulate or restrict any economic, financial, political, or other secular activity which may be associated with the religious practice. So for a temple, a state can intervene, but for what? Not to run the temple, but only for economic reasons, financial reasons, political reasons, or other secular activity. It cannot touch the religious practices. It cannot interfere. So the DMK going in and saying, Archaka will do like this and that will do like that, and you can perform this, you can't have Brahmins as priests, and all these things, DMK government has no right whatsoever. And they recently, what they did with the Archakas, I have a pending case in the Supreme Court, and I'm just waiting for it to be listed, and it is going to be listed very soon. So therefore, I would like to begin by saying that we have complete freedom of religion, subject to reasonable restriction. In fact, everything is subject to reasonable restriction. Do I have a freedom of speech? Of course, I have freedom of speech, but it is also subject to reasonable restriction. I cannot say India should be broken up. That's not allowed. And I cannot say that some people are inferior, some people are superior, nothing of that kind. So there are reasonable restrictions to fundamental right, but otherwise, within that framework, we have a fundamental right of worship, and that includes the fundamental right to perform religious practices within the framework of morality and the other two conditions I mentioned to you, public order, and of course, on that basis, you can, within that framework, you can run the temple as you like. The state cannot intervene. In a very important case, which is now considered the landmark case for all cases, I had been urged by Swami Dayanand Saraswati to intervene in the Supreme Court in favor of freeing one of the most ancient temples of Tamil Nadu, a Shiva temple called Sabhanayakar Nataraj Temple. And it was, must be thousands of years. Temple, the DMK had put it in his manifesto that the Dravidian movement will not be complete unless this particular temple is taken control of by the government and then subject to the government's discipline. So finally, Karunanidhi was able to, in his one of his last terms, he was able to pass an order which was passed in the assembly, and he took over the temple. And so the pujaris went to high court, single bench, lost. They went to the division bench, they lost, and then they lost their nerve, and they went crying to Swami Dayanand Saraswati. He said, we can't go to Supreme Court, we can't afford to go to Delhi, we don't have money to pay all the lawyers, So we are going to give up. Then Swami Dayanand Saraswati said no, and he telephoned me. And he said, Swami, you'll have to take up this case. I said, how can I take up this case? These are the people, affected people. They went to the High Court single bench. They went to the division bench and lost both places. And now if they don't come and I come, the Supreme Court will say, who are you? Why are you poking your nose into this? You're not a pujari. You're not a religious man. You may have a name Swami, but you're not a sadhu. So therefore, they will rebuke me. Maybe they'll fine me also. So Swami Dayanand Saraswati said, you go because I'm ordering you to go and I will pray for you. And lo and behold, this Dayanand Saraswati, who's no more, I regret very much. I don't know what he did. And when I went to the Supreme Court, there were two judges. One was a Muslim and the other was a Christian. And when I saw this, I said, my God, where has Swami Dayanand Saraswati put me in? And I started arguing. And they immediately said, yes, you have a point. And they admitted my case for final hearing. And that's how the process started. By then, these two judges had retired. And it came before Justice Chauhan and Justice Bobde, who later became Chief Justice. And they spent weeks hearing me and all others who came, including the DMK government, and passed one of the landmark judgment in which they said, state has no business running a temple. However, if the financial mismanagement or economic mismanagement takes place, then they may intervene after proving a prima facie case that there has been misappropriation of finances, come in, rectify it, clean up the records, and hand it back to the pujaris or the archakas. They are the ones who will run it. And of course, they are trustees of the temple. They also will have a say. So that judgment is now pakka. No temple can be in the hands of the government, whatever the reason, for more than a small period. And I said, let it be 3 years. They said, no, 5 years. So between 3 and 5 years, government cannot have any temple. Is that happening today? No. Tirupati was taken over by the government when? In 1934. And what is today? In 2021. So, I mean, 88 years or something like 88 years, Tirupati in the hands of the government. I have a petition pending in the Supreme Court. I had two prayers. One is that all accounts or past accounts of the Tirupati temple should be not audited by government, because it is the government which is spending the money and the government which is auditing it. That's not correct. It should be CAG. And I'm happy to say, although the followers of Chandrababu Naidu don't like my saying it, Jagan, who's now the chief minister, whom they all falsely go on saying he's a Christian fanatic and all that, but he told me, we will go to court and say, yes, this prayer of Swami that it should be audited by CAG, we will agree. And so by consent order, that has been agreed. Now I have got one more prayer left, and that is Tirupati should be freed. But here I have a problem which is there for all temples all over India. The court asked me, you please tell us, if we free this from government control, who is going to manage it? And I was stumped. Yes, it's true. How do I do that? And simultaneously, I was in trying to free the Padmanabha Swami temple in Kerala, along with my colleague Mohan Das, who prepared the brief and all that and did all the research. And I went to argue, and the court was convinced. And they said, all right, Dr. Swami, just tell us who does this go to. I mean, if you remove the government from control, who will run the temple. So I said this temple was set up by the Maharaja of Travancore. His descendants are known to me. Monu Nalapat, many of you have heard, he's come in our program. His wife is the princess of Travancore, and her brother is now the king. And so I said, you hand it back to them. So the court said, we can't do that because in 1971, Mrs. Gandhi de-recognized all Rajas and Ranis. So I said, but that was a breach of faith because Sardar Patel had told them they can continue to get privy purses from the government and they can maintain their title of Raja and Rani and their successions, provided you merge your kingdom into India. You know how many kingdoms there were at that time? 600. And of that, Sardar Patel, by sheer dint of work, which spoiled his health and he died afterwards, but Sardar Patel was able to get 500 merged into India. And had we not merged those, India would have been like a mothball eaten coat. You see, hole here, hole here, hole here. And Pakistan would have been more united than India would have been. And so we were saved a major catastrophe, except for Kashmir, which Jawaharlal Nehru said he will manage it. And he made a mess of it. And he made a mess of many other things. But poor Sardar Patel was not able, except Sardar Patel did only one thing. He ordered the army to go and throw the Pakistanis out who had invaded. And therefore, the Raja had agreed to merge his state with India. But Jawaharlal Nehru brought in Article 370, this thing, that thing, and kept all the thing in dispute. And now, slowly, after BJP has come, we have been dismantling that. But let me say that today there are 4 lakh temples in the hands of the government. Its finances are being looted. Its land is being looted. You see, you must know that temples were a part of our society where people congregated. It was not just temple. It was not just a deity there whom you went and did puja to. There was a Bharatanatyam center. There was an astrological department. There was Ayurveda medicine. Oh, it was a kind of a small town-like situation. And when people came there, they came for the whole day. And this is why we are today venerating the temples. And this is the precise reason why the British targeted temples. Do you know that they've created a law called the Hindu temples for Hindu temples, but they have not. The British did not set up a law for Islam, for masjids, waqf boards, none of that, nor for churches. Now this is a shocking thing, and after independence, we have not done it. BJP has also not done it. We have not touched a single masjid or a church. But temples they are doing. In fact, even BJP, I don't know what has happened to them. They went and nationalized, took over 52 temples of Uttarakhand. And we thought that when the Prime Minister will go there for puja, he will announce that, no, I'm ordering it to be returned. Instead of that, he also continued with it. So this, in my opinion, is a great sin and it's going to hit us somewhere. And I have been, I asked this Sangha people, they say, we are not in favor of this. But then if you're not being in favor, please do something. I've asked so many sadhus, sannyasis, they're all against. They said, but what we can do? The government is against us. And next thing we'll know, they'll put us in jail. And we are in big trouble. So we are waiting for you to win the case. So I filed a case. Only thing I achieved when I filed it in the Uttarakhand High Court was that the judge said, this is too big a case for me, but I will do one thing, that the treasury of each of these temples will not be transferred to the chief minister. According to the law they made, the chief minister, whoever is the chief minister at that time, he will become the custodian of the treasury of the temple. That was very dangerous. And so he ruled that out. And now I've gone to Supreme Court saying that even the physical possession should be handed over. So now let me come back and say, what does this all mean? This means that a temple has to be free. Why was this law introduced? It was first introduced in 1925 by the British, who took over temples in Tamil Nadu because the British were sure that Tamil Nadu will never leave British. They will stay with the British because there was a movement of the Dravida Kalagam, which was bootlicking the British. So they were sure, and they also agreed with the British to start targeting temples and so on and so forth. So they introduced a law saying that we can intervene in the purpose of running a temple, and 46,000 temples were taken over by the then British government. And over the years, the DMK Congress and the DMK, they all took it over, and they took away the temple land. You know, see, temple used to maintain itself by having large lands given to them by the Maharaja, and they used to grow crops and sell the crops, use it for themselves, and they had cows, they sold the milk, and so it was a self-sufficient institution. But soon enough, the cows were taken away, some eaten away. The land was used for building MLA's colony and so on. And so this has happened all over the country, in Tamil Nadu, of course, in one extreme, but every part of India, this has happened. So what is today the problem that we are facing? During the Islamic rule, at least 40,000 temples were demolished. Maybe more, but I have counted 40,000. And I asked Ashok Singhal, please tell me, are we to liberate all these 40,000 and give it back, give it back to those people who we may find who would be the original trustees and so on, all this problem? So he said, no. Sangha and the Ishwanda Parishad have sat together and come to the conclusion that there are only 3 temples of this 40,000 we want back. And of course, we hope that the Muslims will cooperate, and otherwise they will go back to 40,000. So I said, which 3? They said, Ram Janmabhoomi temple. Ram Lala temple is called this baby Ram's temple. And then Krishna Janmabhoomi, where Krishna was born, and Kashi Vishwanath. These 3 must be liberated. Why only these 3? Because these 3 are temples where we can't replicate it anywhere else. So when you have a Ram temple and the Muslims have demolished it, well, I can go and build another Ram temple somewhere else, but not Ram Janmabhoomi temple, because that is where Ram was born. How do you know Ram was born? Faith tells me Ram was born. All through the centuries, people said Ram was born there, where the Babri Masjid originally stood. Isn't that ridiculous? No. All over the world is like that. Where was Christ born? In Bethlehem. How do you know? He was born in Bethlehem. The way you came to know is that 400 years later, after Jesus Christ, the mother-in-law of the King Constantine of Italy, or Rome, it was called Rome those days, it was not Italy, King Constantine of Rome, his mother-in-law had a dream that Christ was born in Bethlehem. So she took a delegation and she went and identified the place. And everybody asked her, how do you know this is it? She says, I have had a vision and it was born there. And today, nobody will challenge that. We'll say, hey, how do you know it's Christ was born there? So, because this is faith. And everybody worships Christ, the birth of Christ in Bethlehem. Similarly, Al-Aqsa Mosque. Five clerics of the Islamic faith, they saw Muhammad coming on a horse and then going up some rock and then going up to God in heaven from there, with his, sitting in his horse. And therefore, that rock is sacred. So that there they built a masjid by demolishing a Jewish temple. And the fight is today. The Israelis say, give us back our original Solomon temple. And they say, no, this is where Muhammad went to heaven. So faith, the fight is going on. So all over the world, this faith is accepted. So our faith is Ram was born there. And everybody believes that Ram was born in Ayodhya. Guru Nanak believes that Ram was born in Ayodhya. Tulsidas believes that Ram was born in Ayodhya there. And Ramayana itself says that Ram was born in Ayodhya. Not that exact spot, but born in Ayodhya. But everybody believes it. And all over, after the Muslims came and demolished the temple, people have continued to go from a distance. They have been praying to Ram, Ram Lala, from a distance, because they can't go near there, otherwise they will be killed, so on and so forth. So therefore, this was faith, and it is on this faith I argued before the Supreme Court. Earlier on, these parties, both the Hindu parties and the Muslim parties, they were arguing whose property it is, who was the trustee, and what is his claim, who was the Waqf board, what was their claim. So there's just a property dispute. And for 7 years, the Supreme Court would not touch this this case. 7 years it did not touch. Finally, Ashok Singhal held a press conference and told press conference, I don't think in my lifetime I'm going to see that. So please, like Ram Setu, you saved Ram Setu. Please do this. Even when I'm gone, I want the temple to be built and you must take it up. So I didn't know how to get in, because these two parties didn't want to let me in. They said, who is he? How is he? He's got no property. He has no interest. He was not a trustee. How is he? So they tried to keep me out. So I came by another route. And I said, I, as a Hindu, believe that Ram was born there and I must pray there. And therefore, I'm a party. I've been denied that for so many centuries. So as a Hindu, Hindus have been denied. And therefore, I'm a party. And the court accepted that. On that basis, after 7 years, the proceedings started. And ultimately, we won on that basis. And there I proved also that on a basis of a earlier judgment of the Supreme Court, that a masjid is only a place to read namaz. And namaz can be read anywhere. It can be read in your bedroom, in your living room, on the road, in the airport, anywhere namaz can be. Just put a chadar and start reading namaz. So therefore, there is no sacred place. A masjid is a place for congregation. It's like a place where you all meet together and read namaz together. Otherwise, alone you can read anywhere. So I said, masjid is not an essential part of Islamic religion. And it is a place for prayer. You can pray there. It's a convenient place, but it's not an essential place. Some people filed a case recently. So I just went to Assam to dispose of that case. I'm sure I'm going to win that case. So you'll hear in 1 week's time. And in fact, it became clear in the argument that the Muslim parties who are trying to send me to jail on it, with the help of some people in my own party in Delhi, they wanted me in. But anyway, that's all gone. Because I proved that the Supreme Court has already held that masjid is not an essential part of Islamic religion. It can be shifted. If you go to Google and you type masjids demolished or mosques demolished by Saudi Arabian government, you'll get a list, a long list, maybe 200 masjids, which the Saudi Arabian has broken to create hostels, sometimes in Makkah, to place accommodation for more people. They have demolished them. Masjids, even a masjid built by on the direction of Muhammad, they demolished in Makkah, and saying that it's just a building for reading namaz. Turkey has built demolished masjids for building highways, and the president of Turkey, who's now a dictator, he said, well, you see, highways are more important than masjids. You can build a masjid anywhere. We are building it in another place. So that is one aspect. What's happening in other places is the temples are being looted. It was being looted in Tirupati. In Tirupati, I have filed a case. First, when Chandrababu Naidu was there, at that time, and after when YSR was there, what was happening is that the government appointed Tirumala Tirupati Devastanam Board, which was the managing board, where it was all politicians, all kinds of people who had nothing to do with building the temple or a trustee of a temple. They were put in the board. And that money that came, huge amount of money came in Tirupati. They misused it. Some gave it for Hajj. Some gave it for this. Somebody gave that. Government salaries. All the bureaucrats appointed to manage the administration of the Tirupati temple, they got huge amount of money. So I went on this. And one issue I got was that the Tirupati Tirumala Devastanam Board decided to gold plate Tirupati and make it into a golden temple. I said, this is not your business. This is the business of the pujaris. If they want to do it, I will not object. But you can't do it. I went to court and won the case. But today I am at a situation where, having got the consent of the Andhra government to have CAG audit the accounts of the last 5 years, which means all Chandrababu Naidu period, the things will come out. And now no one will dare with the CAG auditing, which no other temple in India has. But I think all temples in India must have CAG auditing if the government is in it. But ultimately, the government must go. And we have got that order from the Supreme Court, but no government is obeying it. And so we are in this situation where, first of all, the autonomy of Hindu temple is destroyed by government entering on a long-term basis. If there is a mismanagement of the finances, then please, stealing of the land or something, which has got nothing to do with worship, then the government can come, set it right, hand it back. That is the way it should be done. And that is something that we have to abide by. But, the question becomes that why only the temples? Do you think that there's no mismanagement of money and all that in wakaf boards? You think there's no mismanagement in churches? Why this question? Why is this the question there that only temples will be taken over? Because we Hindus are not united. We can't make a noise. We can't get the Pope to come and pass some judgment against us. So we don't have a Pope, because the Hindu religion is a decentralized religion. Yeah, there are so many sadhus, sannyasis, everybody. We have only fixed books, the Veda, Upanishads, Brahmanas. So, like that, Gita. So these are books which tell you what religion theology is. But we don't have any one pope or one head of the religion. So therefore, we have this special problem. So I want to know, point out to you that sometimes we have controversies where people don't understand. Take the Sabarimala case. If you see our constitution, you will see health is a factor. And in my opinion, the Sabarimala, Ayyappa temples in other parts of Kerala, there's no such restriction on women who are between the ages of 20 and 40 or 20 and 60. I don't know what keeping them out because you can't tell when a woman is pregnant or so on. So you just have a blanket rule that in the fertile period, they can't come. Now, but in that Sabarimala, it was very badly mismanaged. Even I was misled in the beginning. I thought that women are being kept out. But it turns out that there is a tradition that the gravitational pull in that area, in that one particular area, is so strong that if women, pregnant women come, they will have a medical problem. And therefore, they made it into a custom that Ayyappa doesn't want to, he's a bachelor, he is not married, so he doesn't want to see women who are marriageable age and so on. Those are all wrong explanations. But there was a scientific, and that is permitted in the constitution under the title of health. So we must be very clear on this. You see, for instance, is it allowable to people to convert their religion from Hindu religion to some other religion or from Christianity into Hinduism, so on? Yes, if they do it voluntarily. If there is monetary inducement, no, cannot be. So in many states, we have a bill on called Freedom of Religion Bill. For example, Himachal, and that too with the Congress Chief Minister, what's his name, Veer Bhadra Singh. He was a staunch Hindu, and I knew him very well. He brought a bill and made into an act that if there is any conversion, then a notice has to be provided to the state government, and the state government will make an investigation whether it has been done by inducement. The Supreme Court itself in 1977 had passed a constitutional bench judgment that conversion is permitted if it is voluntary, but if it is induced, then it is against the constitution and therefore it can be annulled. So the Himachal did it originally long years ago, Orissa did it, they still got it. There are three, four states. I think we need an all India law which says conversions from one religion to another can only take place if it's voluntary and not induced, not by some foreign missionary coming and saying, I will send your children to America with scholarship, but you become Christian first. And that kind of thing will not be allowed at all. If you feel that Christianity suits me better than Hinduism, nobody can stop you. So freedom of religion includes the right to convert, provided you have not been converted by inducement. And most of the conversions I find are by inducement. And therefore, we need to be very strict about it. Some have been scared to withdraw the bill. For example, Jayalalitha had brought in a bill on freedom of religion. And then there was a huge protest from the Americans. And she got chicken and she withdrew the bill. But there are others who have not even brought the bill. So I can't even say. Madhya Pradesh has it, but not because of BJP. It was done during the Congress period. And same thing with UP. Orissa, it was a coalition government. It was there, Swatantra Party. And they did it. So there are, and of course, Himachal, I gave you an example. But I think the whole country for freedom of religion needs a bill, an act, All India Act, saying that no conversion can take place if there is any report that it has been induced. So that is very, very important for us in this country, particularly since we have many religions here. Hinduism is not proselytizing, but Islam is, and Christianity is, and they believe in proselytizing by any means. And this we cannot allow in our country. So one important thing we have to do. As far as the autonomy of temple is concerned, let me say very clearly that this is something which must come. We must free all the temples. But the sadhus, the Shankaracharyas and all the prominent sadhus like Shri Ravi Shankar and Ramdev, etc., they must all come together in a conference and say to the governments, hand over all the temples to us. We will find suitable owners. Because today the government can hand over, but to whom? And for instance, in Tirupati, there's somebody called Hathiram Trust or something. They said we had it in 1983, but that Hathiram is not this Hathiram. So therefore, we couldn't go ahead with it. I told you in the case of Kerala, the Padmanabha Swami Temple, the court said who? I said the Maharaja of Travancore, who's still there. So the court said, but we have de-recognized them. Indira Gandhi de-recognized them in 1971. So how can we recognize them as Rajas? I said, but they are still regarded as Rajas. The public regards them. He said, no, that's not correct. We will not agree. So I've come to the Supreme Court on that. And hopefully the Supreme Court will clear the matter up. Second is, let us know that freedom of religion includes not debasing any other religion. There is a famous case of the leader of the DK called E.V. Ramaswamy Nayakar, whom his followers call him as Periyar, means the big man. Person, he was, of course, he was a terrific fighter. Single-handedly, he fought the upper classes who were dominating the society. And enabled all the backward classes to come up. But they were having come up, the backward classes have gone wild. And now we are back to the situation where again the conflict is there. But one day he felt that this Hindu religion is a dangerous religion. And the British also felt that same way. So the British financed him. He was openly for the British. On 15th August 1947, he went to the governor's residence and prayed to him, please don't leave India. You go from every other part of India, but not Tamil Nadu. Tamil Nadu is we want to be ruled by you British. So that is the kind of psychophancy or slavish mentality he had. But he, one day, in order to demonstrate that all this Hindu religion is all hocus pocus, he went to a shop and bought Ganapati made out of clay. And he brought it there, held a public meeting, and took the Ganapati like that, and they hit it on the floor, it broke into pieces. You see? He says, what, Ganapati? I've broken it into pieces, nothing has happened to me. So somebody filed a case, and it went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, E.V. Ramaswamy Nayakar said, I paid for it. It was my property. I destroyed my own property. How can anybody object? So then the court said, even if you had bought it, it is the Ganapati idol you brought is the vast masses of our people believe that this is holy and it should not be broken, you should not put your feet on it and all that. So this belief you have violated. So there is a section, if you go to the Indian Penal Code, you will find section 295, which says that you have committed a crime, a hate crime, if you do anything which a large number of religious people feel has been an insult to them. So it's a very, very strong, you know, a law. So therefore, today, to somebody, the DMK government is fooling around with the archakas. They are hitting them, beating them. They're cutting their punals, you know, their genios. So all this they cannot do under the law. But unfortunately, the pujaris don't know the law, and the rest of the society is all very pussycat type in Tamil Nadu. So they are not doing anything, and I can't go everywhere. I've done it in one or two cases, and these people have run away. But the fact is, like, for instance, Sabhanayaka, nobody wanted to touch it. All the Tamil lawyers came after I went in. But before that, nobody wanted to come. So there's so much fear that violence will be used against them. So therefore, I think the society has to unite and say that we Hindus, we will collect together and become one and not allow ourselves to be divided. How are you divided? Oh, is Brahmin, is Kshatriya, is a scheduled caste, etc. Where does it say in our scriptures that somebody is a born Brahmin or a born Kshatriya or born scheduled caste? There is no place. Bhagavan Krishna in Gita says in three different places that this Varna Ashrama division is not based on birth. Krishna's own words in Gita. In three places, he's telling Arjuna, it is your gunas which will decide. If you are a person who is a jnani, who is devoted all his life to acquiring knowledge, and a tyagi, therefore you are not greedy about property and all that. That's why Brahmins were used to beg for their food. And it was considered a great privilege for anyone to give them their begging. Because Brahmins never were allowed to earn or make money. And third is, he is a sahasi. That is, he is a nirbhay. He is not afraid of anybody. If you see a Brahmin who is a coward, then he is not a Brahmin. First of all, nobody is a Brahmin by birth. Nobody is a Kshatriya by birth. In fact, you can be born with your parents being Kshatriya and you becoming a Brahmin. For instance, Vishwamitra was born in a Kshatriya family, but he became Maharishi. What about Vedvyasa? His mother was a fisherwoman. What about Kalidasa? He was a Vanvasi. He was in the forest cutting wood and selling it to make a living before he got transformed. Similarly, Valmiki, he was a Dalit. And so if somebody were to ask me, was Dr. Ambedkar a Dalit? I'll say, no, he was a Brahmin. Why? Because he was a Jnani, he was a Tyagi, and he was not afraid of anybody. He was a Sahasi, so he qualified. Jawaharlal Nehru is not a Brahmin because he was not a Jnani. And he was certainly not a Tyagi. forgive you all the things that he was a bogey about, you will be surprised. But so, and he was not sassy. The moment the Chinese came down the hills, he said, farewell, my friends in Assam. I mean, he was always weeping. So, therefore, first of all, we are Hindus first, without doubt, all equal Hindus. And if we choose to be a jnani, teaching profession, a lawyer, a doctor, that kind of thing, and you are not interested in making money and you are not afraid of anybody, then you become a Brahmin. If you are in the army and you are a man of valor, you defend the country, you are a Kshatriya. If you are doing business, you are a Vaishya. And if you do farming, you are a Shudra. And none of these had up and down thing. They were not, Brahmins are on top. Brahmins, because they were Tyagis, their people used to go and respect them. They were Jnanis, they used to go and respect them. But that didn't mean that they considered themselves an inferior. Now the scheduled caste originally was very, very few in our society. And there were people who had broken the law. But their children were not scheduled castes, were not Dalits or Chuachut or whatever is the word for it. So that we use, of course, scheduled castes because that is the name given in our constitution. So a scheduled caste son who is a Gyani, Tyagi and the Sasi, Dr. Ambedkar, for example, he should be called a Brahmin. So therefore, we must now, first of all, in order for our freedom of our religion, the autonomy of our temples, we must integrate. There's no such thing as Brahmin. If you are well-trained in prayers and you want to be an Achka, you can be from any caste. But that doesn't mean only non-Brahmins will be, as in the case of Tamil Nadu. In Tamil Nadu, they say, no Brahmin. We'll have only scheduled caste, we'll have this. It is a question of profession. And that profession, you must have the qualification for that profession. So this is the way we move forward for it. So I would say, therefore, please read Article 25 of the Constitution to understand what is the rights that you have. This takeover by the state of temples is, and that is, can be only for one limited purpose, to rectify what they call as the secular activities of the temple, namely budgeting, financing, keeping accounts, all that. You can enter for that only. You can't decide who will be a pujari. You can't say who will be an archaka. What this DMK is doing is all illegal, completely illegal. I got this case now, it will come up in the Supreme Court very soon, and we will demolish it. I've already demolished the DMK on Sabanaika temple. It is our fundamental right to take it over. This is property of the poor and this and that. I told Karunanidhi, incidentally, was a good friend of mine, because we never agreed on anything, but we were good friends. We used to meet and talk and joke and so on. And I told him, you will regret this. And he did. And he didn't live very long after that. And he made, in fact, in Ram Setu, he made all kinds of jokes with me. Oh, Ram Setu, was Ram an engineer? Which engineering college he went to? And so I got my revenge when he got sick and went to a hospital called Ramchandra Medical Hospital. Then I said, oh, Ramchandra, he has got MBBS. How about that? So I wrote him, make sure that he's got an MBBS. So this is the kind of debasement of Hindu religion, which is deliberately done, which was which an idea of the British. So put to all together, I have literally exceeded my time in a big way. I'll conclude by saying that temples are a place for worship. Temples are a place for meeting fellow believers, and temples are a place for doing holy things like marriages, conjunctic marriages, and teaching Bharatanatyam, etc., etc. So temples are a cultural center plus a religious core, religious center, and we must make sure that government doesn't lay its filthy hands on it. And there are 4 lakh temples in government hand. All of them should be freed as early as possible. I had hoped that the BJP government would do it. Unfortunately, the BJP government also has developed Zamindar mentality, as seen by Uttarakhand. I hope the RSS will assert itself, because the RSS also told me they are unhappy about what has happened in Uttarakhand, and make it a rule that no temple shall be in the hands of the government if it is a government of the state headed by BJP. If it's BJP is there, there will be not a single temple. Put a time factor on it and get it done. This is what I think we need to do. This is a religion which is longest lasting in the world. No other religion has lasted this long. No other culture has lasted this long. UNESCO had found out civilizations of 45 civilizations they listed. 44 have finished off. Egypt, Greece, Persia, which is the Zoroastrians. All of them have vanished from their area. Only religion and culture that has lasted unbroken over the years, despite invasion, butchery, all kinds of things, is Hindu religion. That is because of its democratic framework and the ability for people to find their own places in it without being have to be told from the top that you have to do this, thou shalt do this, thou shalt not do this, etc. So to preserve this great religion, we must show that the temples are free also. Thank you very much. Over to you, Jagdish.
Dr. Swami, बहुत सारे हमारे देखने वाले सुनने वाले लोग हिंदी भाषी है तो आप अगर शॉर्ट में ये कह सकते हैं कि हिंदू मंदिरों के बारे में जो सरकार लेती है इसके बारे में कुछ आप चंद शब्दों में हमारे हिंदी भाषियों के लिए अगर आप बताए तो
पांच मिनट में कह दूंगा। पहली बात मैं ये कहनी चाहता हूँ कि जो मैंने एक याचिका पेश की थी सुप्रीम कोर्ट में और उसकी जो निर्णय आई थी 2014 में सुप्रीम कोर्ट ने, वो एक तमिलनाडु के एक मंदिर को लिया गया अपने हाथों में, डीएमके सरकार ने लिया था, उसको छुड़वा दिया था। और उसमें लिखा है स्पष्ट कि सरकार मंदिर में कोई हस्तक्षेप नहीं कर सकती है, सिर्फ वहाँ की जो वित्तीय मामला है उसमें कोई गड़बड़ी है तो पहले सिद्ध करना पड़ेगा कि ये गड़बड़ी हुई है, और सिद्ध होने के बाद उस टेंपल में जाकर उसके जो कागजात हैं, जो उनके जो दस्तावेज हैं, उसको लेकर उसको ठीक करके फिर वापस कर देना चाहिए। चार पांच साल के अंदर ये निर्णय हुआ, इसका अमान्य हो रहा है, इसको लागू नहीं की जा रही है। तो मैं ये कहता हूँ कि ये है। दूसरा है कि जो भी टेंपल चार पांच साल से ज्यादा है उसको तुरंत वापस कर देना चाहिए, जो उस समय के ट्रस्टीज थे जो इस मंदिर को चलाते थे, पूरा उसको सारे जो अकाउंट्स हैं ये सारी कर देना चाहिए। तो हमारे देश में 400,000 मंदिर हैं जो सरकार के अधीन हैं, सरकार के नियंत्रण में हैं, एक भी मस्जिद नहीं है, एक भी चर्च भी नहीं है, सिर्फ हिंदुओं के मंदिर ही सरकार के हाथ में है। यह अंग्रेजों ने शुरू किया था, क्यों शुरू किया था, क्योंकि मंदिर के इर्द गिर्द में लोग इकट्ठे होते थे, वहां चर्चा करते थे, वहां भरतनाट्यम देखने के जाते थे, वहां अपने जन्मपत्री देखने के लिए जाते थे, शादी विवाह करने के लिए जाते थे। तो एक एक समुदाय जैसे वो एक जगह थी, और उस समुदाय में हमारी देश की आज़ादी भी बात करने लगे, स्वतंत्र कैसे ला सकते हैं। आप जानते हैं कि वंदे मातरम आई, वो तो मंदिर के रास्ते से आई थी, अरविंदो मंदिर के रास्ते उन्होंने सबको प्रोत्साहित किया था। तो हमारी जो परंपरा रही है, मंदिर जो है ये हमारी समाज की एक सांस्कृतिक, एक सामाजिक और एक धार्मिक स्थल है, और इसमें इसको खत्म करने के लिए अंग्रेजों ने ये शुरू किया। उन्होंने मस्जिद को नहीं छुआ, उन्होंने चर्च को नहीं छुआ, सिर्फ इसको छुआ, और हम इसको अभी भी इसको कर रहे हैं। तो इसको जो भी मस्जिद, जो भी मंदिर सरकार के हाथ में चार साल से ज्यादा है उसको छुड़वाना चाहिए। खेत की बात है कि बीजेपी ने अभी उत्तराखंड में बिल्कुल उल्टा काम किया है, उसमें इसको खंडन करना चाहिए, और राष्ट्रीय स्वयंसेवक संघ अपने अनुशासन की जो उनकी जो ब्रह्मास्त्र है उसको उपयोग करके बीजेपी से उसको विवश करना चाहिए कि वो मंदिरों को छोड़ दें। तो ये है। और ये, मैं ये कहता हूँ कि हमारी जो संविधान है उसके अंतर्गत हमारे जो धर्म है या उपासना पद्धति है इसके लिए पूरा मूलभूत अधिकार है, लेकिन मूलभूत अधिकार हमारे संविधान में अंकुश लग सकती है यदि वो राष्ट्रहित के लिए आवश्यकता है। वो कौन सा राष्ट्रहित के लिए, आपको उसका विवरण देना होगा, या किसी और के धर्म पर हस्तक्षेप कर रही है तो इस प्रकार से, परंतु मूलतः हमें पूरा मूलभूत अधिकार है हमारे जो धर्म है उसको उसकी पालन करने के लिए, हमारी जो उपासना पद्धति है उसके उसको उसकी रक्षा करने के लिए। तो इसीलिए हमारे जो यानी सबसे अटूट संस्कृति हिंदू धर्म के आधार पर आधारित है और इसकी रक्षा करना हमारे हमारी दायित्व है और इसीलिए इस दृष्टि से हमने अपनी विचार रखी।
धन्यवाद अरविंद, यू हैव एनी
अनम्यूट योरसेल्फ।
डॉक्टर स्वामी, आई थिंक टुडेज योर 40 मिनट्स टॉक इज वन ऑफ द बेस्ट डिस्कोर्स ऑन दिस टेंपल इशू एंड एवरीवन who is a Hindu and who feels emotional about the ownership of Hindu deities and temples and properties will be fully convinced that there is a need to decontrol the temples. Now the question is, who will do it? Naturally, it has to come from the political forces. We have the people who are leading the political parties. Majority of them are Hindus because 83% of the country is Hindu. Whether you talk of Mamata Banerjee, you talk of Naveen Patnaik, you talk of Akhilesh Yadav, you talk of Mayawati, you talk of anybody, or you talk of BJP leaders, they are all Hindus, the top of them. Now the question is, these people who are named except the BJP, will they ever raise this issue about Hindu temples? Because they are having an eye on the Muslim vote bank. Therefore, this issue they will never take up. Now, the question is BJP. BJP has been in power for about 15, 13 years in this country. Exclusive power, including 5 years of, 6 years of Atal Bihari Ji, who was called Hindu Hriday Samrat. Then we have Adarniya Narendra Modi Ji, who has been there for 7 years with lot of promises. In the manifesto of BJP about the freedom of religion and the control of temples, and you are, I mean, who can deny that you have taken the cudgel, you have fought for the recent takeover of Uttarakhand, now the Devasthan board in Uttarakhand. Not only that, Jagdish gave example of your fight in Tamil Nadu, Chidambara temple, and Tirupati also. Now the question is, who will do it? Number one. My second question, only you can answer. Second question is, how can we unite Hindus to have one organization, and that organization says, so and so will control this temple, or so and so, a group of people will control the temple. For example, we have institution of Shankaracharyas. These Shankaracharyas are also divided. Some of the Shankaracharyas are called Congress agent. Some of the Shankaracharyas are called BJP supporters. Now the question is, even if the religious heads of Hindu religion cannot sit together and decide, you have the Dharma Acharya Sabha and so many different Sabhas are there, but will 100% Hindus ever agree on one organization headed by a particular saint? So who will take it up in political terms? And who will take it up in religious terms? This is my question.
Starting with your last question, you want me to answer in Hindi or English?
Hindi mein kariye to zyada acha hoga kyunki bahut se darshak hum bol rahe hain ki wo Hindi sunna chahte hain. Aur khas taur se Uttarakhand.
Dekhiye, main pehle kehta hu ki hamare desh mein jo प्राचीन परंपरा से लगातार शंकराचार्य बनते आए हैं वो पांच हैं। एक है श्रृंगेरी, दूसरा है जो पुरी में है, तीसरा है द्वारका में, चौथा है ज्योतिर्मठ। आज की परिस्थिति में ज्योतिर्मठ की शंकराचार्य और द्वारका के एक ही हैं। वो कोई डिस्प्यूट चली थी, उसके बाद बनाया गया था, अभी तक परिवर्तन नहीं हुआ। और ये पांचवा है कांची। तो पांचवा, पहले तो चार ही बने थे, परंतु आदि शंकरा कश्मीर में अपने काम करने के बाद वापस आए और कांचीपुरम में बसकर वहीं उनका समाधि हुई थी। तो इसीलिए उसको भी एक शंकराचार्य का मठ मानते हैं, और जो चंद्रशेखर सरस्वती जो थे 100 साल रहे, उनको तो मैं ही खुद जो कोई धर्म धार्मिक उस प्रकार के धार्मिक कट्टरपंथी था नहीं था, तब भी मैं उनको भगवान मानता था। और जो बातें उन्होंने मुझे समझाई लगभग 25 साल, लगभग 20 साल के लिए, उन्होंने 77 से 94 तक, माने 17 years, राइट, तो इन्होंने मुझे जो बातें सिखाई बताई, और मैं उनको ये भी मानता हूँ कि आज भी वो आशीर्वाद देने की स्थिति में है। तो ऐसे भगवान लायक लोग रहे हैं। तो मैं ये कहता हूँ कि आज आप श्रृंगेरी आचार्य जो हैं वो सबसे अधिकतम ज्ञानी हैं मेरी ख्याल में। और इसके साथ आप और भी जो साधु हैं, जैसे श्री श्री रविशंकर हैं या बाबा रामदेव हैं, ये सारी इनको इकट्ठे करके लगभग 100 लोगों को ऐसा इकट्ठा करना चाहिए, और सरकार करें तो बहुत अच्छा होगा। पर सरकार ईर्ष्या में हो, इसको महत्व नहीं देना चाहिए, उसको नहीं महत्व देना चाहिए, सिर्फ मेरा महत्व होना चाहिए, ये सरकार में भावना है, तो फिर वो कुछ नहीं होने वाला है। और जो कर सकते थे वो थे स्वामी दयानंद सरस्वती, परंतु वो स्वर्गवास हो गए 4-5 साल पहले। तो इसीलिए आज मैं समझता हूँ ये कोई कठिन समस्या नहीं है। इकट्ठे करो और सरकार को कहो कि सारे जो 4 लाख मंदिर हैं ये हमें सौंप दो, हम धीरे धीरे उसके लिए ट्रस्टीज ढूंढेंगे और जो इसको चला सकेंगे। हमारे देश में बहुत लोग हैं, कई लोग हैं जो बड़े अमीर बने और उन्होंने मंदिर भी बनाया जोरदार, जैसे बिरला ने जो लक्ष्मीनारायण मंदिर बनाया है वो तो चमकता है। तो इसीलिए सेठों का भी इसमें साथ लेकर अपने देश में इसकी पुनरुत्थान करने के लिए प्रयास करनी चाहिए, और करना है और कर भी सकते हैं।
रमेश जी,
Dr. Swami, I mean, this is more for even Jagdish can probably fill in. When you said temple lands, I mean, there was a huge scam even under the BJP government in Maharashtra, where a lot of lands were sold, apparently or allegedly, during the BJP government in Maharashtra. To Jagdish, if you can fill in, because there was a huge car, and all said and done, nothing has been done again. Okay. So that is just getting repeated in Uttarakhand. Modi appeared in 2012, I think, in one of the Hindu Dharma Acharya Sabha's meeting. He was there in Ahmedabad. You were also there in that during that session. He had apparently said that he would get rid of HRNC Act in Gujarat, but that didn't happen. But the irony is, after so many years, he is now taking over temples under the same guise of these acts. Is there a central act that can be passed that can abolish all HRNC Acts and at every state? So that's my question. So basically, it stems from this power that the states take over under the guise of saying, I have this religious endowment act to reset, or I mean, to correct all those things. Can the central government, does it need a parliamentary vote, or can it be done at a cabinet level to abolish this act across this country?
These are all acts passed by the state assembly. There is no way the center can do anything about it.
Okay.
But central can give leadership. They can call them and persuade them. And Samadham obey the dand. They can use. And dand is something our government easily in the center can use. But I would prefer Samadham than bathe or dand. I think it was something was really possible. We came very close. We were even jokingly saying that we have Lok Sabha, Rajya Sabha. We should have one Acharya Sabha also.
Correct.
So that, you know, 100 Acharyas heading mutts which are more than 100 years old. Not Johnny come latelys, And, you know, they should be part of the Acharya Sabha and interact with the members of parliament. So this can be done. The issue is that this greed that comes up, that is something which only can come when you have men in politics who don't need anything for themselves and do not think that money is all that you need in politics to buy people. It requires a visionary thing. It will happen someday, I'm sure. I never thought that I could save Ram Setu. Out of the blue, a judge came before me who in one sweeping knock finished off all the attempts to finish the Ram Setu. And same thing with Ram Mandir. We had a Chief Justice, a Sikh gentleman. He was the one who initially began the process the Ram Mandir issue to be taken up by the Supreme Court. So there are people, but you have to motivate them and wish them. Shri Ravi Shankar also, for example, in the Ram Mandir case, people have forgotten and it has been ignored. He persuaded the Muslim community to accept the verdict and accept another place because a masjid can be shifted, and they accepted it. It was a very big thing. And it is only after that we had a smooth. Otherwise, there could have been riots after the Supreme Court judgment.
But Dr. Swami, that's a pattern in this government, that all credit goes to only one place. So it doesn't matter. So one other thing, Dr. Swami, you raised this issue saying that if the temples are freed from the HRNCE, who do they give it to? But like you also mentioned later, each temple has a sampradaya, right? It has a tradition or it has a set of people. So based on this Hindu Dharma Acharya Sabha, which you have expounded, this sabha can create the sampradayas and hand over the temple governance because it's more democratic than what it is today. Yeah. Today is pure autocracy. I mean, complete nonsense under the guise of government. They're just taking over temples and usurping land, using away all the gold. I mean, the audacity that the Tamil Nadu government is going through of melting gold, it doesn't belong to them. How can they make a decision? Because as you said, you argued successfully in the Sabhanayagar temple and in other cases that the temple deity is the owner.
That's right.
So how can somebody else sell somebody else's property, right? That's exactly, I mean, you brought it out in so many cases in a lot of the things that you've appeared on, saying, and the primary one being Sabhanayagar with Karunanidhi said, I'm going to hire the best lawyers to fight it, and they lost to you.
Who's not even a lawyer.
Yes. And he hired the biggest senior counsels that he could, but he still lost against you. How can such a government take a decision of property that they don't own? They are supposed to only administer. That to only mismanagement, take a decision on melting gold, Dr. Swami.
Yeah, I think it's more a cowardice also of the religious-minded Tamilians.
I mean, technically, yes, all Brahmins are cowards, default, but for a few.
No, why Brahmins? They are not Brahmins if they are cowards. I don't believe. There are a lot of people who claim to be Brahmins. I say, no, you're not a Brahmin. You are making money left, right, and center. How can you be a Brahmin? I can give names, but it's not the appropriate place to give you names. But if you want, I can give you names.
The point is, even if you make money, at least stand up. You know, if you're not able to stand up in public, support people who do it. Even that, the hypocrisy of this community is they want everything free. It doesn't work that way.
But now you tell me how many people have stood up against the Uttarakhand
zero
atrocity then?
But for you,
Why only VHS
and the priests, nobody else has stood up. I mean, I'm very proud. That's what Virat Hindustan.
मैं कह रहा हूँ कि अगर उत्तराखंड में 3 महीने में चुनाव होने वाले हैं और ऐसा लग रहा है जो रिपोर्टें आ रही हैं कि वहाँ बीजेपी की सरकार हारने वाली है. तो ये देवस्थानम बोर्ड का मुद्दा 5 साल के लिए गर्त में चला जाएगा. तो बीजेपी के लिए बहुत बड़ा अवसर है, बहुत बड़ा मौका है कि चुनाव आने के पहले पहले इस मुद्दे को सुलझा लें, नहीं तो बड़ा क्योंकि जो भी कांग्रेस की सरकार आएगी वो तो हिंदू का पक्ष लेने वाली नहीं है, ऐसा लगता है।
अरविंद जी, इंपॉर्टेंट पॉइंट, अरविंद जी यू मेड अ वेरी,
मैं आपको पूछने चाहता हूं कि किसी किसी मंच बीजेपी के अंदर, राष्ट्रीय समिति जो है, नेशनल एग्जीक्यूटिव है या पार्लियामेंट्री बोर्ड है कि अभी है, किसी ने यह सवाल उठाया? किसी ने नहीं उठाया। एंटायर पार्टी ऊपर से नीचे जो यानी एमपी हैं या कोई कमिटी के मेंबर हैं, एक ही ने उठाया, वो मैं हूं, और मुझे ही उन्होंने उतार दिया।
Dr. Swami, one important point. I just want to bring what you just mentioned and what Dr. Swami had warned us before. This new HRNC Accord Endowment Act in Uttarakhand gives unfettered powers to somebody, the chairman. And now you're going to hand that over to a Congressee after you lose the election. What a stupid idea to bring this act. Now you're going to hand over that entire power. If Congress comes there, what's going to happen to those temples? It'll be looted to nothing. The short-sightedness and stupidity of the BJP government in Uttarakhand to bring this act, I want it to lose. Then only they learn a lesson.
No, I'm saying there's another big danger. If a man like Rawat, who was earlier a chief minister, he was a member of parliament also, if he becomes a chief minister, he will withdraw the act.
Harish Rawat.
Then where will we be? So I think that will be a much more long-term damage than the Congress coming and sharing the loot. So anyway, these are things that are, beyond our control. So I've left it actually. Somebody must get up and say no, this is not allowed.
Dr. Swami, मैं पूछना चाहता हूँ कि राष्ट्रीय स्वयंसेवक संघ क्यों इस मुद्दे को नहीं उठा रहा?
अब पता नहीं, उनका तो स्टाइल पब्लिकली बोलने का तो नहीं है, तो प्राइवेटली जरूर कहा होगा, बट बीजेपी सुने ना तो फिर क्या करेंगे? इसी फिर कायाकल्प तो नहीं कर सकते हैं ना, क्योंकि कोई ऐसी कदम नहीं उठाना है जिससे कांग्रेस को वापस आने के लिए मौका मिल जाए। तो जरूर कुछ करेंगे। मैं तो जो मेरी बातें होते रहती है उससे लगता है कि पहली बार मैंने देखा है ये क्रोध आई है इसमें। और अब वो वाजपेयी के काल में भी क्रोध था, जो उस समय के सरसंघ चालक थे वो मुझे कहते थे चुनाव आने तो हम दिखा देंगे वाजपेयी को, और फिर बट उसके बाद तो और बुरा हो गया, सोनिया गांधी आ गई। सो इसीलिए मैं ये कहता हूँ कि इसका कोई रास्ता ढूंढना चाहिए, नहीं तो हम पाप कर रहे हैं, और हम पाप करेंगे तो हमें फिर उसकी कर्म को भुगतना पड़ेगा।
यू आर राइट डॉक्टर स्वामी, बिकॉज स्पेशली भोलेनाथ, वी हैव सीन व्हाट डिस्ट्रक्शन ही कैन क्रिएट।
Yes. So
we have to be very clear. And if you make mistakes like these, it's just, and as I said recently, even the ex-chief minister, when he went there, the people who sent him back, they said, no, you
can't.
Kedarnath, they said, get back, get out. We are not allowing you. Yeah. Luckily, the prime minister, when he went there, they were about to do the same protest, but somehow or the other, they kind of reconciled. But he should know that even if 10 people, the priests, if they stick their mind to it, if you mess around with these temples, this is what you're going to get. All the image that you've built over the past 7 years can go tomorrow.
Yeah. Hi.
Arvind.
Okay, we can
continue. Dr. Swami, ये एक मुद्दा है, जो मुद्दा जब तक इस मुद्दे का हल नहीं निकलेगा तब तक ये मुद्दा हमारे हिंदू मन को उद्वेलित करता रहेगा। हमें ये बात चुभती है कि आपने इतनी सिंसियरिटी से, आपने इतनी गंभीरता से इस मामले को उठाया है, परंतु आज की जो सरकार है उस मामले को सुन रही है और सारे हिंदुओं की अनदेखी कर रही है। ये एक बहुत बड़ा पाप है, और जैसा कि रमेश ने कहा कि जरूर भोलेनाथ इसका श्राप देंगे, और श्राप का भागी उन लोगों को बनना पड़ेगा जिन लोगों का हाथ मंदिर के सरकारीकरण में है। और ये मैं एक बार फिर कहना चाहता हूं, मैं और जगदीश और हम लोग बात करेंगे आगे, कि आज का जो आपका भाषण है, आज का जो आपका संभाषण रहा है, इसको हम सभी भारतीय भाषाओं में अनुवाद करेंगे और सारे हिंदू समाज के बीच में इस मुद्दे को लेके जाएंगे और बताएंगे कि यदि डॉक्टर स्वामी की बात इस मुद्दे पर सुनी जाएगी तभी इस मामले में कोई सलूशन निकलेगा या हल निकलेगा। और हम आरएसएस के लोगों से, भारतीय जनता पार्टी के लोगों से और दूसरी राजनीतिक पार्टियों के लोगों से जो हिंदू हैं या हिंदू हित की बात सोचते भी हैं या जनेऊ कोट के ऊपर भले ही धारण करते हैं लेकिन वो जनेऊ दिखाना चाहते हैं और अपना गोत्र बताना चाहते हैं, उनको भी बताते हैं कि इस मुद्दे को हिंदू हित में जरूर उठाना चाहिए। आज का भाषण आपका जन जन तक पहुंचाने का हम प्रयास करेंगे। दिस इज द ओनली वे वी कैन हैव ए पब्लिक डिबेट ऑन दिस एंड द पब्लिक कैन बी प्रोवोक्ड टू रेज दिस इशू पॉलिटिकली आल्सो। थैंक यू वेरी मच डॉक्टर स्वामी फॉर ब्रिंगिंग द इशू टू टेबल एंड थैंक यू रमेश एंड थैंक यू जगदीश शेट्टी जी एंड थैंक्स द टेक्निकल टीम लेड बाई आशीष ईश्वर अय्यर, गडगी राकेश, तेजस स्वामीनाथन एंड विशाल मेहता। दिस इशू विल सर्टनली बी टेकिंग अप, वी विल टेकिंग अप, विराट हिंदुस्तान संघ विल टेक अप दिस इशू इन ए वेरी बिग वे एंड ट्राई टू प्रोवाइड सम काइंड ऑफ पॉलिटिकल सोल्यूशन ऑल्सो। थैंक यू डॉक्टर स्वामी, वी विल मीटिंग अगेन नेक्स्ट संडे 8 PM विद अनदर इशू एंड डॉक्टर सुब्रमण्यम स्वामी। थैंक यू व्यूअर्स फॉर सपोर्टिंग अस। We'll be meeting next Sunday at 8 PM. Till then, Namaskar, Jai Hind.
Namaskar, Jai Hind.